commend to the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Happy Easter to everyone out there that celebrates and that does not. It's still a beautiful day out here in Lexington, Kentucky, and it's going to be an even better one this afternoon, so I hope you get outside, you enjoy yourselves, you enjoy the weather, and you enjoy a little bit of sports talk this morning, because I know that for some people, a lot of people are going to church for the first time in over a year in person. I know my grandparents decided to go to a church service for the first time since the pandemic started way back last March, so I just want everybody to be safe out there. And we have a lot of sports to talk about. We're going to talk about the Kentucky Boys Sweet 16. We're going to hit on the NCAA tournament. We've got a little bit of NFL Draft Pro Day stuff coming out of Kentucky's Pro Day. And anything else you want to talk about under the sports sun right here on the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. But the first thing I wanted to start off is something that I saw online that kind of went viral, and it set me in, I guess, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And what this person said rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I want to give you the way I see it. So there is an ESPN analyst named Dan Orlovsky. He used to be an NFL quarterback. He is most known for running out of the end zone with the Detroit Lions during their 0-16 season. He is a guy that's achieved a somewhat bit of fame on ESPN. And he said something on the Pat McAfee show. I believe it was around last Tuesday, but I could be mistaken on when it was said. But it was recent. And it sparked a big debate, I won't really say a debate. It sparked criticism to Orlovsky, essentially saying that he was either misinformed or he lied or that he was trying to put an African-American quarterback down in Justin Fields. And it led to a larger conversation on the way that black quarterbacks are talked about in football culture. And that's something that has been around for a long time. So I can see where the outrage came from. And I'll let you hear what, or I will read to you what Orlovsky said. And then I'll tell you the way I see it. But I want to kind of start off with something that's a little, it'll be a little uncomfortable, but it's something I feel is important. And it's something to share because it's very real. And this is a very real conversation. Because when I was younger, and this was only in the late 2000s, this was not 1954, this was not in even what I would say would be not recent time. I feel like this is recent time. In the late 2000s, I started harvesting my love for the NFL draft. I started doing everything I could to read about football, to research about players of the past, current, and future. I would often go on message boards. And if anybody knows, message boards can be a bit of a controversial cesspool at times. But in the one I was on, it was pretty decent. Okay. The problems surrounding what I grew up learning, and this was not what I was taught at home, this was what I was taught at the quote-unquote scouting level, the football narrative level, and that's that you couldn't win with a black quarterback, even though Doug Williams had won a Super Bowl, and I believe he had won a Super Bowl MVP. Now, that is something that I'm going to look up on the fly. But Doug Williams was the first quarterback to break that mold, and he was named Super Bowl MVP, yes. So he was the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl, win an MVP in the Super Bowl. And that accomplishment itself, all the way back in, let me do this, carry the one, in 1988, should have killed that narrative of what African-American quarterbacks could succeed, how they could succeed at the greatest level. But for some reason, that did not eliminate the narrative that I had come to figure was a common phrase in the NFL draft world and in the NFL world. Even though you had historically great black quarterbacks like Warren Moon, like Randall Cunningham, like even in like less than a half decade before I started on these boards and figuring out what the opinions were of players, Donovan McNabb led the Carolina Panthers, or excuse me, Donovan McNabb led the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl, and Michael Vick led the Falcons to an NFC championship game. But the common thread, quote unquote, and it was all veiled under racial tendency, was that you could not win with a black quarterback. Maybe it's because of, because, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of athletes, young athletes, if they are the best athlete, they'll put them at the quarterback position and they're told to run. You don't have the type of, or at least back, I would say, at least quote unquote back then, a lot of quarterbacks, you go to these camps, you train to be a pocket passer, and if an African-American quarterback was a great athlete and put at quarterback, let's say a guy like Michael Vick, and Michael Vick ended up being a great quarterback, a guy that I think is going to be an NFL Hall of Famer, but the athletic archetype of that, and a modern one, you would say Lamar Jackson, even though Lamar Jackson's been a thrower his whole life. But the criticism was, is that you can run, but you can't throw. And a lot of it was veiled racism under the context that black quarterbacks could not intellectually handle the position. And that was something that was very real for me growing up in the terms of the way other people viewed African-American people at the quarterback position. So there is a long-standing, not-so-veiled racism behind prospects and quarterbacks that are not white. It broke the mold time and time again, yet there's always that looming. I think we've finally gotten away from it. I truly do. Cam Newton, as much as people hate Cam Newton, and a lot of the reason people hate Cam Newton is because of culturally who he is as a person. Because he is so against the mold, against the grain, and so unapologetically black. I believe that. You may disagree, but that's what I believe. Because Cam Newton came in, and he was the first African-American quarterback to win MVP in the NFL. He was the Super Bowl contestant that year, and then when he didn't jump on that ball, everybody had a field day. We hate Cam Newton. All right, great. All right, that's you. Not you, the listener, but that was the detractors. Okay? Lamar Jackson wins an MVP. Russell Wilson wins a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes MVP in Super Bowl. And so on and so forth of the excellence of African-American quarterbacks. So that narrative has been forcibly put away. In this climate, I don't think that could fly. But in the late 2000s, even as back then, that was the narrative. So that is something that's always stuck with me And I don't think about it anymore when evaluating prospects, but from time to time, it can pop up. The problem that happened the other day around Dan Orlovsky is that he went to criticize Justin Fields, and not so directly criticize him himself. It was from what he's heard indirectly. And I will let you in on what that conversation was. So Dan Orlovsky went on the Pat McAfee Show, again, for those who don't know, and this is the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. You can give me a follow at Angelo Media Lex, and you can also give me a call at 381-1313. That's 381-1313. For those who don't know, Dan Orlovsky is an ESPN analyst, and he is a former NFL quarterback that went on the Pat McAfee Show and gave his reports from around the league on Justin Fields, in which he was kind of buried for. He was very highly criticized. He was forced to release an apology, and I'll discuss that in a second. But this all started because Pat McAfee began, okay? Pat McAfee began with an NFL analyst named Tom Pelissero. Tom Pelissero said that Justin Fields didn't want to be friends with teammates. He just wanted the starting job once he transferred, okay? So the first bit of information that was in this interview with Pat McAfee is Pat McAfee referred to another person that had reported on why Justin Fields was dropping. Pat McAfee couldn't understand why Justin Fields was dropping in the draft. Orlovsky said, in return, people who say that Justin Fields can't get off the number one read, so your first read, you need to stop listening to them. These are not my opinions. This is what I've heard, is what Orlovsky said. I've heard he's a last guy in, first guy out, not the maniacal work ethic. He also said that Justin Fields, this is what he has heard from around the league and was not his opinion. They ask, where is his desire to be a great quarterback? There's desire to be a big-time athlete. Where is his desire to be a great quarterback? Is what Orlovsky said. And it was those two things. The last guy in, first guy out, not a maniacal work ethic type of person, and that he has a desire to be a big-time athlete, which to me, I kind of read that as he has a desire to be a superstar at the NFL level, at the college level. But maybe in training, in his training, he doesn't have the desire or the work ethic to put in the time to hone his quarterback skill and craft. Either way, that's not Orlovsky's opinion. That is what he has heard from around the league. So McAfee continued, so you're out on Justin Fields, huh, from what you've heard? Insinuating he's influenced by, that Orlovsky is influenced by what he's heard, he must be out on Justin Fields. This is Orlovsky. No, I'm not. I'm not, personally. I called this game against Michigan State, dude, where they were, like, decimated by COVID. Like, the whole team had COVID. And I just remember going to the game, like, all right, Fields, if you're as good as people say you are, like, figure out a way. You got to be special. And he was freaking unbelievable. And that summed up what Orlovsky's appearance on Pat McAfee's show contained about Justin Fields. He had to go after the backlash from social media for his comments. He had to go and essentially put up an apology video for what reason, I don't know, other than backlash, because people thought that he was purposefully going to disparage a young quarterback of African-American lineage. And he had to say that he talked to an offensive coach at Ohio State and Justin Fields' current quarterback coach, John Beck.
that, oh, he's a great work ethic. He has a great work ethic. He's a great kid. And Orlovsky had to put that out there as almost just like water on a fire, in which people came and said, well, you weren't doing your journalistic duties in the first place by spreading misinformation or wrong information. I mean, newsflash, your offensive coach at the college you played for, if he would have been like, yeah, I talked to an Ohio State offensive coach and they said he was terrible, what kid would want to go to Ohio State knowing that when they try to go to the NFL and make their career earnings, that they're going to have words thrown at them at across the way once they leave? That was never going to happen. And do you think the guy that's teaching Justin Fields how to be a better quarterback leading up to the draft, the guy that's probably getting paid good money to do that for Justin Fields, is going to go and ruin his clientele? No. So it was disingenuous to put that out there anyways, to try to appease a crowd of people that honestly I don't think we're going to get it in the first place. Because I'm looking, I tend to look at this because I love the NFL draft so much, and I do know the history behind the suppression of the African-American quarterback from a narrative standpoint, whether that's, I mean, going back to 2018, Bill Polian said Lamar Jackson's going to have to play wide receiver. I don't think that's the case. I think he proved that when he won the MVP. It's been around for a long time. There was a guy that was an NFL draft analyst. He's somebody that I feel like I saw writing as recently as a couple of years ago for draft magazines, because he can't be on Twitter or social media because of what he wrote about Cam Newton. So I want you to remember what Orlovsky said. Orlovsky said he defended Justin Fields in reading defenses. He said, these are not my opinions, this is what I've heard, when he criticized him for essentially having a not-so-great work ethic. He even said that he was impressed by Fields and that he was not out on him. But yet people wanted to act like that Dan Orlovsky treated Justin Fields unfairly. There was an NFL scout slash draft critiquer named Nolan Naraki back in 2011. And he wrote a scouting report on Cam Newton. And scouting report is putting this very, very, very professionally, because what it was is it was a slander piece on Cam Newton. So take what Orlovsky said he was hearing from people that worked for NFL teams about Justin Fields. And this is what Naraki said about Cam Newton. He said, Cam Newton is very disingenuous, has a fake smile, comes off as very scripted, and has selfish me first makeup. Always knows where the cameras are and plays to them. An enormous ego with a sense of entitlement that continually invites trouble and makes him believe he is above the law, does not command respect from teammates, and will always struggle to win a locker room, lacks accountability, focus, and trustworthiness, is not punctual, seeks shortcuts, and sets a bad example, immature, issues with authority, not dependable. So that's what this joker of a reporter or scouter or whatever he wanted to fancy himself as said that about Cam Newton way back in 2011. And obviously he can't get away with that today. He's nowhere to be seen. Hey, Nolan, give me a call. Yeah, he can't. He was pathetic. I always thought that was one of the worst things that I had seen in the terms of just blatant, I guess I don't want to get caught for slander, but you can guess what type of side of the fence he sits on when it comes to his preferences of people. What Dan Orlovsky said about Justin Fields was not Nolan Naraki. He was not putting Justin Fields down because he was an African-American quarterback. And I feel like that was the conversation and that was the narrative around Justin Fields and Dan Orlovsky's comments. And I really hated to see that, because in the NFL draft world, it's one of the few places, and I think wrestling is another one for most parts, that you can kind of strip race away when talking about just something you enjoy. or something that comes to evaluation of something. Because in the NFL draft world, from everything that I've ever done, I've been following the NFL draft since 2005, you don't look at race, you just look at players. And you look at who they are. And again, this is not even a scouting report by Orlovsky. This is not his scouting report. This is what Pat McAfee asked Orlovsky, why do you think Justin Fields is dropping? And he gave information that he heard from people around the league. I don't want a lot of these conversations to go in that way, because I do understand that there is a long lineage of, or a long history, I should say, of African-American quarterbacks being unfairly criticized and being discredited for things that seem more about the outside of their skin instead of the inside of their head and how they play the position. And it is largely very, 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 very unfair. But in this one instance with Dan Orlovsky, this is not the case. He was just saying what people had told him, and for some reason it piled on him to what I view as unnecessary. And, you know, I don't know what sparked. I think a lot of this has to do with the racial climate over the last year. I think that because of that, it's kind of piled on, because I get that the quarterback position is so representative and so important, but there are plenty of players throughout every draft, both black, white, and the other, that get criticized for work ethic, for motor. Some players of both races are so bad that people just say, you're not even good enough to be in the league. And like Christian Barrymore, for an example, a defensive tackle out of Alabama, he gets criticized constantly for effort, weight, all of that, but There is no other context to it, because you're just doing a scouting report on a defensive tackle. But it was different because Fields is a quarterback. And I don't want to see in the NFL draft world a narrative go against someone that was just sharing information on why the possible reasons Justin Fields would be dropping below quarterbacks like Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones. Because in the end, I am a Justin Fields fan. If I had a shot at a quarterback, I'd go Trevor Lawrence first, Justin Fields, and then Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance. Like that. But that doesn't mean that he's not able to be criticized, and that doesn't mean that Orlovsky wasn't right with what he heard. In the NFL draft world, at least for those that do it right, it's the one place you can still kind of strip race down and celebrate everybody for who they are as players on the field. You know, me and my friends, we'll watch stuff and just get so excited no matter who. And if Orlovsky's getting attacked like that, then you're kind of taking away what the critical part of NFL draft evaluation is. And we need to separate the Dan Orlovsky's from the Nolan the Rockies. And that's the way I see it. When I come back around the corner here, I will begin to talk about the Sweet 16, at least give you a little bit of a breakdowns of the game. I actually was not able to be there this year due to a limited, I guess, credentials or seating or whatever. So I'll hit on it quickly, and I also want to talk about that insane Gonzaga-UCLA game. All coming up next on the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com.
Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't want to die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wish. Don't you open up that window,
It's the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5 FM, streaming live all around the world. At WLXG.com, give me a call at 381-1313. That is 381-1313. I'm going to try to get a guest on to talk about the Boys Sweet 16, so hold tight for all that conversation. I did say that we would talk about the NCAA tournament because obviously we have got some big games that happened and a big game that's coming up, a national championship game on Monday, which is going to be between, I think, the two teams that everybody's wanted to see play all year. But there were two teams trying to stand in that way. One, Houston, who didn't do a very good job, and UCLA, who did a absolutely admirable job. Let's just hit on the first game real quick. Houston and Baylor played, and I was watching it early, and by halftime, that game was over. Baylor rolled over Houston 78-59, and I got to say, that score wasn't even as indicative as the play seemed. I mean, Baylor hit the shot. I believe Mitchell hit it. It could have been someone else, but I believe it was Mitchell that hit the shot to end the half, and it just punctuated. I mean, Baylor was up by more than Houston had scored. It was just an absolute slaughter. And Baylor will finally have some real competition when they face up against the number one team in the nation, who almost didn't make it, as Gonzaga was able to defeat UCLA on a buzzer beater three, the first buzzer beater of the NCAA tournament, and my, was it a classic one, as Jalen Suggs rose up from just above, or I guess just below, I don't know how to say it in this one, I'll say he was just past, there we go, he was just past half court when he rose up and banked in a three-point shot as time expired, and he said he always wanted to run up on a table like Kobe Bryant or Dwayne Wade, get up on that table and scream to the crowd as he did. Gonzaga defeats UCLA 93-90 in overtime after Johnny Juzang rebounded a layup attempt that he had missed and banked in a right near the basket two-point shot, just essentially what was another layup, with 5 seconds to go left in overtime before Suggs hit that shot. Obviously, everybody is familiar. Johnny Juzang played University of Kentucky basketball, and last year transferred to UCLA. I got to say, Mick Cronin has done an excellent job there early on. Mick Cronin, obviously the former Cincinnati basketball head coach, was hired by UCLA and was widely mocked, I think, by everybody. And there was a part of me that, I mocked it too, but there was a part of me that said, look, if UCLA can't pull in the big fish a coach anymore, I think the one thing that we've seen play true time and time again, and recently in NCAA tournaments, is that you have to have one of two things if you want to make the Final Four / championship. You either have to have an historically great offense, or you have to have a great defensive team. And one of those teams, if you look at last year, Texas Tech's Chris Beard, Virginia's Tony Bennett, a lot of those Virginia teams that are really good. But a lot of these teams, it seems recently, are all defensive teams. Whereas Gonzaga, 2018 Villanova, historically great offensive teams. We got a call on the line. Caller, what's your name?
Jim from Frankfort.
Jim, what's going on, Jim? Haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I've been doing a lot of work, and I don't know if you remember this. Several years ago, Calipari and Mick Cronin had a dust up at a coaches conference over Marcus Teague, and basically Calipari told Mick Cronin, "Hey, look, you get to come eat at the table." When he was in Cincinnati, then he goes, "You get to come eat at the table after we're done eating."
Wow!
It was pretty widely reported that was what was said, or something worse to that effect.
Oh yeah, so this was back in 2015. Yes. It says, huh, that is really interesting, and I was not aware. I guess that had just slipped from what I remember. That is a good point.
Wow. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, now that things have, now that the script has flipped, so to speak. And of course, you know, UCLA got it done with, you know, Johnny Juzang, and I'm the one who will fully admit I was wrong about Johnny Juzang. Mm-hmm. And something I failed to consider, I think a lot of people did, you know, the first 4 months he was here, he had mono. He was sick basically the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't start coming on until the end of it. But anyway, after that game last night, which, by the way, I would put Duke, Kentucky and that game last night, 1 and 1A, as far as the greatest games ever played in the tournament.
Wait, which games again?
Duke, Kentucky, when the
Leitner shot?
He whose name we shall not mention.
I know. And then that game. Okay, I've got one to post to you though. What about the North Carolina Villanova game, the championship game?
And that would be 1B.
All right. Just making sure, Jim, because I feel like that game doesn't get respected enough, especially that shot. But continue. Yeah. That game last night, yeah. Jim, was. I mean, I got to see. I literally got home. From being with my family, I literally got home, turned it on with 54 seconds left, and got to see essentially the entire game from there.
Wow. Well, you know, think about the Butler-Duke game, championship game, where if Butler hit that last shot, they win the title.
That was Gordon Hayward, too.
Yeah.
There was that one. Look, if you want to start reminiscing, I mean, we can go to Memphis, Kansas with the Mario Chalmers shot. The only reason why I bring up that Villanova one is because when you talk about the greatest shots of all time, let's start back with Marcus Page hit that crazy three-pointer to tie the game for North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Jenkins, like, whenever you talk about the greatest shots of all time, I mean, Chris Jenkins shooting a three-pointer at the buzzer to win a national title, isn't that what we all grow up in the backyard doing? Like, isn't that what the shot that we dream of taking someday?
And that's true. And what about the greatest shots ever missed? The North Carolina State against Houston game when guy missed a three-pointer, and Lorenzo Charles is right there at the basket to tip it in for the national championship for North Carolina State.
Yeah.
But that's why I love this time of year. I mean, you know, it kills me Kentucky wasn't in it this year. We didn't play well enough, and we didn't earn our way into it, so that's our fault.
Yeah, but, and we have seasons like that are terrible. You know, you got the Nerlens Noel injury season. And then you bounce back. I will say that the Johnny Juzang thing, I mean, it's just night and day, and you have to wonder when Cal turns these guys into spot-up shooters, and a guy like Juzang goes somewhere, and he turns into an unquestioned number one type of scorer for a team, and it makes you kind of wonder, well, what if Dante Allen went somewhere and put up 20 a game? What if, you know, a guy like Winyon Gabriel that was, you know, exiled to the three-point line, if he went somewhere and was able to be more himself. You got to wonder with a lot of these guys now. There are guys like Deron Lamb slipping my mind with a couple of more. My apologies. But Deron Lamb's the first one that comes to mind for me, where it's like maybe Dotson, that kid that transferred here a long time ago, that, like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You're going to make your money someday off of shooting threes. Maybe Davion's another guy. You know, but then you got to wonder unlocking guys like Devin Booker or Juzang or anybody like that. So yeah, what did you think of Juzang's performance this tournament run? Because I thought he's been unbelievable.
I do too. And you mentioned Winyon Gabriel. He didn't have very many good things to say about John Calipari.
This is where I deviate a little bit, Jim, is because that was the first thing I led, my first solo show here on Sunday mornings, I led with a Gabriel Cal thing, because Winyon didn't say bad things necessarily about Cal. He was kind of saying essentially what Cal said to him: oh, you're going to be like Kevin Durant, and then, you know, if you don't get it right away, this is what's going to happen. I mean, he was telling the truth, though.
No, he wasn't. I'm not saying he wasn't telling the truth. He was telling the truth.
Yeah.
I think there are times that Cal can't get out of his own way. if that makes sense.
Oh, I think Dante Allen's example number one. He wouldn't play him until he got ejected from that game against, was it Texas A&M or Mississippi State?
No, Vanderbilt. I believe it was Vanderbilt.
He got ejected from the Vanderbilt game? Okay.
And Bruiser Flint put
Dante in.
Yeah, and kept him in because he kept making shots. And yeah. I've got the suspicion that Calipari, I'm sure that this season is weighing around his neck like an anchor right now, and I'm sure he's going to do a lot of soul searching. He's got to get out of his own way a little bit. Maybe
I don't know if he can.
I don't know if he can either, but he's going to. I mean, in order for him to have success in this day and time, because times have changed since he came in 10 years, college basketball has changed 30, 40%. It's just changed.
It has. I think Alabama's the perfect example of that. This Alabama team that Nate Oates has constructed, when you get these SEC-level athletes to play the way he had them playing, I mean, it's all just – I believe we saw one graphic – when they played us where it was like 4% of their team shots came from mid-range and the rest were layups, threes, and free throws,
Do you realize that that's a throwback? That's nothing new. Rick Pino, when he came to Kentucky, first thing he said was, I either want y'all shooting threes or layups and nothing in between. So this is nothing new. That's just how, and I, not that I'm a great Pino fan, because I'm not. I think he's a traitor. But that said... I mean, Benedict Pino or Trader Rick, whatever you want to call him. But that said, that's what those kids did. I think his second year they were 22-6, and he kind of got away from that. So what those guys are doing as far as basically using the analytics of it. This is nothing new. I mean, there have been other coaches that have done it, some with more success than others.
We'll have to see what he does going forward because obviously Grady is a kid with that's transferring in with a lot of experience. If Davion stays, his three-point shooting ability, and then the other kid from Creighton that is rumored to come here, what is it, Zegakowski or something? That kid is rumored to be coming to Kentucky, who's a career way above 40% three-point shooter. So it seems like that maybe Cal's going to start fishing in the transfer portal market for the three-point shooters and keep recruiting these mega athletes that want to go to the NBA. And I think that's kind of where he's leaning towards doing. But, he started to recruit some kids at the high school ranks that are high athletes that also are more primary shooters. And we'll see if he adjusts in time. But, Cal's not a spring chicken. He's not the type that's going to be doing this until he's, gray and bald. I don't see him doing that, so this just might be what he is until he decides to go. So I don't know.
Cal's my age. We're both 62.
Well, and, see, but that's why you're young and spry, and Cal's Cal's waning. Okay, that's the difference, Jim.
No, I don't know, man. Every morning when I wake up and every joint in my body hurts, I'm thinking, okay, this is what. Getting old as well.
it's like you remember playing against DeMarcus Cousins in pickup that one time. Your body's sore the entire next day.
I went in for the layup and he knocked me into the third row. So
Jim, thanks for calling this morning, man. I hope you have a good Easter Sunday.
Happy Easter to you, my friend.
See ya. All right, if you want to give me a call, 381-1313. That's 381-1313. I'll come back right around the bend. Talk a little bit about the Sweet 16 right here on the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com.
Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and running, running,
and running, running.
This is the Angelo Carriero Show on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Hopefully you all have enjoyed the show as much as I have and being safe on this Easter Sunday. It's going to be a beautiful day. Go outside, spend it with your family, anybody that you consider your loved ones, and just relax, baby. Just relax. We're almost through the pandemic, and things are starting to bloom and starting to get warm. Restrictions are coming down. Everything's getting good. So just sit back and enjoy. I want to give a congratulations to all of the teams that played in the Sweet 16, but none more, I suppose, than, wait for it, the Highlands Bluebirds, who are your 2020-2021 boys state champions. Yes, they defeated Elizabethtown 79-60 last night to secure the KHSA boys Sweet 16 basketball tournament presented by UK Healthcare Championship. Week started off on Wednesday. Ballard defeated Madison Central in what a lot of people thought was the best first-round draw that there was. Madison Central, obviously, the team that kept Lexington out of the Sweet 16. Ballard defeated Madison Central 70-61. Bowling Green defeated University Heights 85-57. Elizabethtown over Knott County Central, which I believe Knott County Central was the team that kept Reed Shepherd's North Laurel out of the tournament. Let me check, because I want to double check. I don't want to just be throwing out things across your radio waves, because Reed Shepherd, boy, he is somebody special. Let's see, 14th region, it was not them. They beat Hazard. Okay, then who was it? Was it Knox Central that defeated North Laurel? Let's see. Yes, it was. It was Knox. Yeah, not counting Knox. I got that confused. Okay, Knott Central defeated Hazard to make it here. But Elizabethtown defeated Knott County Central 87-59. GRC, the team that I kind of was nominally pulling for. Obviously, I don't hope any of the teams lose. I'm not that type of person. But I thought that GRC, we have seen them on varsity game night for a couple of years. They have a good basketball player named Jerome Morton, who was... And they had some other guys, too. This is a studded field of basketball players with the GRC. But Morton kind of led the way, and I was really wanting to see how well he performed. And he did do well, and so did GRC in the tournament, even though they didn't win it all. But so your first day winners were Ballard, Bowling Green, Elizabethtown, and George Rogers Clark. And then Thursday, Ashland Blazer defeated Knox Central, the team that did beat Reed Shepherd and his North Laurel squad. 56-38, Boyle County defeated Paintsville 70-56. Highlands defeated Muhlenberg County 88-60. McCracken County over Bullitt East 68-56. Okay, so now you've got your field set for Friday, where it's the last day before the semis. Ashland Blazer defeated Boyle County 80-44, which was just a brutal, really a brutal loss for the Rebels, because Boyle County was another team I was interested in. I'm a big fan, obviously. It's a shocker to you that, as a person growing up in Central Kentucky, that I was really pulling for the Central Kentucky teams, Madison Central, GRC, Boyle County, some of the last ones that were kind of left from the area. Ashland Blazer defeated them 80-44. Ballard defeated Bowling Green 61-53. Bowling Green, a power around here. Elizabethtown defeated George Rogers Clark 65-44 in a game that Josh Moore claimed was not even close. And Highlands defeated McCracken County, which would be their closest point of margin the entire tournament, 63-53 against McCracken County. So Blazer, Ballard, Elizabethtown, Highlands set up yesterday in what was going to be an action-packed day. First time I can remember, they played the semis and the state championship on the same day. Elizabethtown defeated Ballard 69-53. A lot of people thought Ballard might be the favorite going in. A lot of people like Blazer, and they lost 66-50 in what set up the state championship game against Highlands and Elizabethtown. Highlands defeats Elizabethtown 79-60, and the Highlands Bluebirds are your state champion. I want to say congratulations to Highlands, all the other teams. Look, this was a hard year. These kids wanted to play basketball. I know some kids got COVID and felt the effects and said it was absolutely awful. It was awful for those teams that were struck by it, and a lot of teams were stricken by it in December and January, and a lot of times I wasn't sure whether or not we were going to make it through the year, but With the vaccine rollout, when we got past Christmas and New Year's, everything started simmering down. Obviously, KHSA did a great job keeping Rupp Arena healthy. I thought that EKU also did an amazing job because they you know kicked us out of the gymnasium between the two regional games that they played on the Thursday that we went to in the semifinals of the regionals, and you know, sanitized the entire arena, and I thought that was it's cool to see people go to that precaution. So these kids were able to safely play basketball, and like I said, I just thought that was a really, really awesome move by everybody involved. And then lastly, there was Kentucky's Pro Day. Obviously, I began the show with the NFL draft, only right that we end it with the NFL draft. As Jamin Davis is a guy that has shot up draft boards. Jamin Davis is a guy that, again, Coach Ortmeier was on at the beginning of the year. And I was like, Coach, I don't know about this guy. And he swore by him up and down. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll believe you. Jamin Davis, absolutely phenomenal pro day. He looked absolutely outstanding. He weighed in 234 pounds at 6'4". He had a 42-inch vertical and a 4.41 40 time. That right there could lead him being the second linebacker off the board after Micah Parsons. I thought, it said, when Davis initially cleared for the draft, many believed he would be a third to fifth round pick, and this is off of a Sea of Blue. I was one that said fourth to sixth round. I thought he was going to be a solid linebacker, maybe out of the mold of Blake Martinez, a former Green Bay Packer, signed a big deal with the New York Giants. Jamin Davis absolutely wrecked the pro day. All of his numbers, he will rise. He will be a first-round pick, and he's a guy that's going to be in the middle of NFL defenses for 10 years. It was just an outstanding day for him. Brandon Echols had an amazing broad jump. He also posted a time of 4.34 with a 42.5-inch vertical. Landon Young, he had 34 reps on the bench press, and he had a 4.91 40. All that stuff, absolutely incredible for the Kentucky football Wildcats, and I'm happy to see that. I hope that Kentucky, there's up to seven that could be drafted. I hope to see seven, and I'm glad you all listened this morning on the Angelo Carriero Show. I'll be back next week. We'll talk everything under the sports sun, and I'm going to give a WrestleMania Night 1 recap and a WrestleMania Night 2 preview as we are in WrestleMania season, baby. Stand and deliver. NXT is on Wednesday and Thursday. I'll be talking a little bit about that with Dan Pauly on his Friends in the Corner podcast. So go to @AngeloMediaLex and be on the lookout for that. And that's all I got for you today. Thank you so much for being here on the Angelo Carriero Show this morning. I'll be back next Sunday from 10 to 11 right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, and streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com.